The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. Today's Power Lunch is brought to you by The Palm at Tyson's Corner, Virginia. Sure, The Palm is great for a fancy night out, but it's also the perfect midweek spot for a lunch with a client, or lunch to catch up with a friend, or maybe even to do an interesting podcast like this. Power Lunch menu selections at The Palm start at $26 for an appetizer, meal, and dessert. Book your reservation today directly at thepalm.com, open table, or by calling them at 703-917-0200.
I can make most anything on the menu except
whatever you got is fine.
I'm going to say some bad words. You're just going to have to deal with it.
PB&J with the crusts cut off. Well, Brian, this is a very nutritious lunch.
Hey, you got enough money to pay for all this? You know, money, cash, dollars, dinero.
So what I believe you were trying to say is thank you.
Thank you?
You're welcome.
What can I say except...
Tuesday, April 28, 2026. Thank you for downloading. We have got a special Power Lunch at The Palm, the triumphant and glorious return of my friend Carol Maloney, who is still my friend, even though I thought I had lost her for a while there. She said she just went through the year from hell and then realized after hearing me on the radio, hey, I should probably text Zabe back and tell him I said hey. So I get together with Carol Maloney and the lovely and talented Julie Donaldson from Fox 5 in D.C., and we had a nice power lunch. You'll hear the whole conversation coming up in just a few minutes. But first, once again, the limits of instant replay have reared their ugly heads. A lot of people upset after the end of the Anaheim-Edmonton game on Sunday night. What happened? Well, it's overtime. Hell of a series going on, and Anaheim scores what maybe is the game-winning walk-off goal in overtime. However, the puck was barely across the line, and it was underneath the skate blade of the Oilers' goalie. And so, therefore, you couldn't actually see with 1,000% definitive proof that the puck was across the line. You could extrapolate to a certain extent. You could assume, obviously, but could you prove? Probably not. Here's how it sounded on the television.
That's what I said. I'm surprised this called a goal on the ice. But obviously, that's what they felt they saw. Here it is here. This is going to be the best look. And I mean, you can't see it 100% over the line, but that's
because
over the
it's
line,
called the goal on the ice. And again, the fact that
and
it's called
the
goal of
the
on
official,
the ice,
maybe that's why he saw it from an angle that we can't see. I mean, you look at that there from where he was. And from his angle, he would have been able to look under, but I don't see him pointing to a puck or calling that a goal. So he called that after.
After. Absolutely.
That puck was...
That's why I said there was no indication.
They're still looking at this over...
Now they've got to see...
Boxes.
So there it was on television, and the whole process was very disjointed, for sure. The refs gave no signal right away as to whether it was a goal or not, because it looked, for the most part, like it was not a goal. Then the refs came together at center ice and decided to call it a goal on the ice. Now, here's my question. Were they told by somebody in the replay booth or center, which I believe is in Montreal, the headquarters for the NHL's replay center, were they told by somebody who had already seen the super slow-mo straight down from the top of the goal cage, hey, this is going to be a goal, therefore you need to change your call now on the ice so that when we look at it officially on replay, it's easier to confirm it's a goal and send everyone home. By the way, the game was in Anaheim, so just factor that in. Would this have been the same ruling if the game was in Edmonton? We'll never know. So the refs then went to video review. It took a long time. Not a single angle showed that there's 100% certainty of the puck. Like I said, there is a extrapolated assumption of, well, if the puck is all the way here and the goalie's skate blade is obscuring the part of the puck that may or may not be touching the red line, but we can kind of figure that it's probably over, but we can't prove it. They said, you know what? Not enough proof to overturn. Goal stands, game over, and Anaheim is up 3-1 in the best of seven. This is the limits and the folly of replay. You got to get it right. Not only is getting it right overrated, that's what Solly taught me, but getting it right oftentimes is impossible. All the Kings cameras, all the Kings slow-mo, all of the angles you could possibly throw at something, sometimes you just don't know. And then you get the perverted machinations of how the system works, okay? Because I'm convinced, having seen this, that somebody got in the ear of one of the referees to say, look, before you guys make your official call on the ice, you need to say that it was a goal because we see it up here in the replay center. It was probably across the line. You can't convince me otherwise. You know, they're now CENTCOM in sports, the replay centers, have access in real time to the very ears of the referees on the field and on the court and on the ice. And so I'm just dubious that they could call it a no goal with their bare eyes, which is kind of an oxymoron. What do I mean, their bare eyes? Well, they're not wearing glasses, Zabe. They call it no goal in real time with their own eyes because it looked like mostly a no goal. And I would have been fine if that call had stood as a no goal. It just wasn't across by enough, per se. It didn't look clear enough. You know, getting the calls good enough or mostly right to me is plenty, because the microscoping and the absolute pixel by pixel analysis does nothing for me as a sports fan who watches these games for what, everybody? I remind you, for fun. That's right. No one lives or dies on the outcome of these games. Nobody goes to jail for life on the outcome of these games. And don't say, but millions of dollars are wagered, don't you? Yeah. Hey, there's winners and there's losers. Just like if you want to wager on the games responsibly, go to mybookie.com. Mybookie.com, promo code ZABE to unlock all the full promotions. The official gambling partner, wagering partner, and action partner of the ZABEcast. But yeah, it's just these games are for fun. I'm fine with the calls being mostly right. When you get down to the nitty-gritty of replay, not only is it sometimes impossible, but I believe sometimes the process becomes completely perverted and undermined by, well, okay, let's see. It's probably not a goal, but it looks like it's going to be, so you're going to have to call this a goal. Oh, okay. I got that in my ear now. Okay, good. Call it a goal on the ice. That'll be easier then to uphold because we can say, well, there's no definitive proof that it wasn't in. Over on NBC Sunday night, Mike Tomlin made his NBC debut as a soon-to-be commentator on Sunday Night Football and had a very interesting and, I thought, candid and I would even argue reasonable, if not semi-noble, take on why he decided to step down, a bit surprisingly, as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers as the longest tenured coach in the league. Now, this could just be something easy to say in the moment, or it could be genuine, but it was something that gave me hope that, hey, maybe Tomlin will be really good on television, candid in a way that many others are not, certainly an improvement on Father Tony Dungy, who, nice man, great coach, but a zilch on TV. And a weird-looking head, but that's the head that God gave him, so I'm not going to go too deep on that. Here's Tomlin talking about why he stepped down.
I mean, just where I am in life. And I thought it was a good time for the organization, to be quite honest with you. We didn't have a lot of success in the playoffs in recent years, and there's just some veteran players there, man, guys like Cam Hayward and T.J. Watt and Boswell, man, that I thought just that were worthy of the excitement and the optimism associated with new leadership.
Okay, I like it. First of all, being very candid, we hadn't had a lot of success in the playoffs as of late. No shit. Any Steeler fan will tell you that tenfold. But then to say that I thought that some of the great young players deserve the energy of new leadership, well, okay then. So we'll see if Bob's big boy can give him that energy. Good old Mike McCarthy, Western PA's native son. But I hope Tomlin's good on Football Night in America. We shall see. Rest in peace, Monty Coleman. Didn't bring this up with Andy in my Chinese food couchside chat yesterday on the podcast. Hope you enjoyed that. I can't believe I didn't slip it in there. I know it happened shortly before I got to his house, the news that the great Monty Coleman, linebacker for the Washington Redskins, a four-time NFC champion and three-time Super Bowl champion, and just a smooth-running, absolute elite middle linebacker, passed away at the age of 68. And boy, as somebody who is now about to be 58, I don't like these kind of headlines. Further proof, by the way, that time comes for all of us and nobody knows how many days we've got left, so you better get to living now is what I'm saying. Monty Coleman was the consummate Redskin. 16 years in Washington, rarely missed a game. 236 regular and postseason games, ranked second most in Redskins history. Who's number one? Oh, please, don't even ask. It's Darryl Green, you dipshit. He was named one of the 80 greatest Redskins and has been enshrined in the Redskins / Commanders Hall of Fame. Okay, like we got to get the slash in there. Here's a great little short NFL Films tribute to the player that Monty Coleman was.
Time to get back on the top. Starting today.
Ain't no tomorrow.
Right now,
this
man.
Is it. This is bigger than the Super Bowl. Because if you lose today, you don't go.
Who are we playing tomorrow? Nobody. This is it.
6 minutes.
This is it.
Here goes the snap. He's back. Going to get rushed. Sacked Monty Coleman. Now try to quiet the crowd.
Another enduring Washington Monument played his finest game in a Redskins uniform.
My most memorable game was 1993, Richie Pettibone's year as head coach, and we were playing the Atlanta Falcons in RFK Stadium. I think he had three sacks, forced fumble, fumble recovery, an interception, and a touchdown. It was a big day for Monty Coleman that day.
That is, what a day. Three sacks, three forced fumbles, a fum six, and it happened during one of the worst years of that run of, you know, seasons, that it was Richie Pettibone's year. Ooh. But yeah. So Monty Coleman, rest in peace. Monty Coleman is one of those players, and every team, every NFL franchise, every city has one of these guys who is known and revered as a teen legend, could have had this amazing career, and yet nobody kind of outside the actual market or the fan base knows of this player. Like, for those of you not from Washington, did you know who Monty Coleman was? Do you remember Monty Coleman? Also, Monty Coleman never really went into any kind of media after his playing career. So he just sort of went on about his life, which is perfectly fine. And he wasn't cocky or braggadocious. He was just an efficient, smooth-running, athletic tackle machine. Rest in peace, Monty Coleman. Man, 68. We have a new record for marathons. Under 2 hours. It has been a bit of a mythical mark that was broken once by this guy, Sebastian Sawe, from Ethiopia, or from Kenya, excuse me. And it was not official because it was in a so-called exhibition. There's a whole lot to this whole 2 hour marathon thing that I did not know until I watched this brief report on it. But it just underscores the fact that the state of the art in athletics continues to improve no matter what the sport is. And running is the simplest of sports. Run as fast as you can for 26.2 miles. I'm sure there are techniques and tricks and tips and training and this and that, but the simplicity of the sport, and nobody's playing defense against you either, but the state of the art, the improvement in athletes, the drive to get a few seconds better continues unabated. That's why when old heads like Andy say, well, you know, this guy from 50 years ago, he could play today. I'm like, the fuck he could. You're implying that the state of the art has gotten no better. And that's clearly not the case. Here was Sebastian Sawe breaking this legendary, iconic 2 hour mark.
There's a bit of history maybe in the offing here.
It's long been the holy grail in distance running, a sub 2 hour time in a marathon.
They said it couldn't be done.
The defending London Marathon champion, Sebastian Sawe, smashed the previous world record of his late countryman, Kelvin Kiptum.
Absolutely incredible. I've never seen anything like that.
The time, 1 hour, 59 minutes and 30 seconds.
I was well prepared. The training I've done, the results have come now.
We've literally witnessed history being made, but more than that, it's an iconic barrier. There's been this discussion, is it even possible? Can it be done?
Not only was it done, but it was achieved by two athletes, with the runner-up, Ethiopia's Yomif Kejelcha, also clocking a sub-2-hour time.
They probably couldn't have picked better conditions to be running this marathon. So, when, you know, when you're running for 2 hours, you don't want the temperature too hot. It's also a relatively flat course.
Kenyan Eliud Kipchoge went under 2 hours in 2019, but the time wasn't official due to it being an exhibition event with rotating pacemakers.
He's getting quicker.
In a bid to avoid suspicion, Sawe has requested additional doping tests in the lead-up to his races. The Kenyan's average speed in London was 21.18 kilometres an hour, and he ran the second half of the race quicker than the first.
Nothing is not possible. Everything is possible.
A day of milestones was topped off by Ethiopia's Tigs de Sefa, who broke her own women's-only world record with a time of 2 hours, 15 minutes and 41 seconds. Duncan Huntsdale, ABC News.
So there you have it. I was curious to learn that the previous sub-2-hour marathon was not considered real because, A, it was an exhibition, B, they had pacemakers, in other words, other runners rotated in to run fast, to help pull along the guy trying to break the record. And they also said they used lasers. And I'm like, oh, Scotty, lasers? What are those? And I think I saw them in that clip there being projected onto the course in a way to guide the runners to make it even more efficient. I also did not know that to break a record like this, you had to have, I'm sure, what some would call Goldilocks conditions. Not too hot, not too cold, everything just perfect. Kind of a flat course as well. But still, that's an incredible thing. And now Adidas is going all in on the shoe. Now, yes, the athletes are getting better, but also the equipment's getting better as well. Adidas tweets, Darren Revelle is going hard this morning. A $500 shoe will hit the market in 3 hours. It is the Adi Zero, what is the, the Adi Zero Adios Pro Evo 3 Lightning Light Strike Pro Evo. It's a running shoe with a giant, I want to say 2 to 2.5 inch sole that is curved kind of like a boat on the heel and the toe. And this shoe must be really, really nice to run in, as are many other modern running shoes, which also helps improve the, quote, state of the art. What's the next big milestone? I don't know, now that somebody's run sub 2 hours. An hour 55? An hour 50? An hour 45? I know we're never going to get to a one-hour marathon. Not in my lifetime. Probably never. Maybe a robot one-hour marathon. And I recently saw a video, because they're running robot marathons or robot races over in China, and the robots are getting faster and better and wiping out less. But if you want to see something funny, go Google search robot racing or robot running. And when these robots that are programmed to run at fast speeds, these humanoid robots with arms and legs and all that, when they go down and their servers and their motors are still going, oh, it's gold, baby. It's comedy. Limbs are flying off. Pieces are flying off. One day we'll have a robot run a sub 1 hour marathon, and it will both be awesome and terrifying. Entertainment news. Peacock, the streaming arm of NBC, is struggling to turn a profit. Comcast, its parent company, says it is approaching profitability. Approaching. Can you define approaching? Well, we're getting closer. But co-CEO Brian Roberts knows he still has a problem. This from Bloomberg.com. Oh, did I mention how much Peacock has lost so far? More than $11 billion since it debuted in 2020. Wow. So it's approaching profitability 6 years later. Let's say in another year it gets to break even. So that's 7 years and $11 billion underwater. It now needs 7 more years and $11 billion in net profits to get to break even overall. I don't know how they're going to get there. I feel like the whole world has traded digital pennies for analog dollars, or the other way around. We've traded the analog dollars that fueled the media world for years and years and years and years for digital pennies. Something's got to give, but wow. Yeah, how's it going there, Mr. CEO? Oh no, we're approaching profitability. We're getting there. We're creeping up on it. Maybe if we fire a bunch of more employees, that'll do the trick. Yeah, let's do that. All right, let's take a break here. When we come back, we go to lunch with Carol Maloney and Julie Donaldson at The Palm. Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good, maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at mybookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. Mybookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
This first part.
Oh, we're already recording?
Well, yeah, of course we're always recording. You want nice, natural, smooth start to everything.
Forgot about live mics. Live mics, everywhere.
Oh my goodness. We are coming in hot.
To that point, when you're on the morning show and you're on from 4 a.m. until 11 a.m., you know, you're running back and forth, especially on good day. Like, they tell you, don't turn off your mics. You go to the bathroom, just, we're not pulling them up. Don't turn them off because you forget to turn them back on.
That's right.
They have signs everywhere. Is your mic on? I had to be yelled at like five times today. Julie, I need your mic on.
Yeah, but you have to be so careful with the live mic. When you go to the bathroom, I remember a coworker getting fired for what she was saying in a bathroom about the company and her mic was broadcasting.
Did you ever see the Naked Gun movies? Where Leslie Nielsen.
There you go.
The original Naked Gun guy, Liam Neeson, became
Shirley?
The guy.
Don't call me Shirley.
Don't call me, you're right, exactly. No, he was at like a big conference. He had a wireless mic and he goes to the bathroom and it stays on. And they can hear him making all these noises to everyone in there. So, yeah. So I'm glad we're talking microphones. By the way, it is great to have Carol Maloney and Julie Donaldson here for a power lunch.
Reunion, right? Reunion show.
I don't even want to ask how long Carol has been
remarried, proving that hope triumphs over experience.
Not married, engaged.
I was about to say, wait, I missed the wedding?
Engaged.
Would you cut me out of your life if I didn't invite you?
I'm like, come on now. I like a good party.
And working for a Windows company. I'll just leave it at that. Home improvement company. Mm-hmm. I love it. So you're out of the biz, but you want back in. You want to produce this podcast.
That's right. I think we should... We always dreamed about it.
You have a great instinct for, and you sent a lineup of things we can talk about today.
Well, Julie and I were like, we've been out of the business, right, for a while. And so we were talking about what makes sense for us to weigh in on in terms of sports. This is a sports podcast still, right?
Julie, you're on Fox 5. You're considered a general assignment reporter.
Yeah, I'm a reporter, fill an anchor. Lately, I've been doing the morning show.
Anchor in the morning show?
Yes, sir.
Well, about damn time.
Yeah, 4 a.m.
You know, I texted her and I was like, Julie, you're killing it, but you're up at 4 a.m. to stand in front of a tree that's fallen down in front of a sidewalk.
Very true.
Surely someone with your experience in the industry should be doing something better.
Yes, so I've been filling it on the morning show and I've been anchoring 4 to 6 a.m. or 4 to 5 a.m. and then doing hits throughout the other shows. And then we do Good Day DC, which airs from 9 to 11 a.m. And that's so much fun. That's just like, it's like rallying cats because you're in one position and then 5 minutes later in the next and you're just all over the studio doing fun segments. Really get like the coworkers are great there. You know, Steve Chenevy, Tucker Barnes, they've been there for forever. They're so much fun. Makia, Marissa, Jacqueline, they're just, it's a very welcoming. I really like the work. I just hate the hours.
Yeah.
I mean, we're trying to wake up at 2 a.m. Like, the struggle is real. I went to bed last night at 7 p.m. And everybody's like, how'd you do that? I was like, I forced myself.
I mean, you still
look... There might have been a few other things.
She looks dewy and fresh. I look way more tired than you. This does not seem fair.
I don't know. You're blurry.
I put my glasses back on. Right? That's the only way anything's in focus.
The thing I love about this, though, is that, you know, everybody's like, you left sports to do news? Are you crazy? You know, I like that every day that's something a little bit different. I do welcome the sports stories when they do come across and I get to cover them because, you know, stabbings and killings and shootings, you know, are depressing.
That's the thing. So in the pre-show texting, you said my life is just nonstop chaos and madness. And I actually thought about you in this regard. Carol, you've been in local television as well. You know, you got to cover if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bleeding in a major city. Like Washington, D.C. Yeah. There's a lot of heartbreak.
It is.
There's a lot of insanity that you go, how? Why? How do you deal with
that? There's a lot of broken people out there. There's a lot of hurting people out there, I realize. And not in a negative way, but it really makes you feel really grateful for what you do have of a sound mind, of a healthy body, you know, of being able to have family and connection and all these things that a lot of people just don't have. They get into these spots and they get into a despair. And, you know, you do have these stories that are just some of the horrible things that are happening in society. I don't know where this comes within me, but I do have this innate way of kind of like disconnecting. And I think you have to.
I think you have to.
You can't do this business if you're like an empath, because there's too many things that are heartbreaking. There's still too many things that get to me and I just want to like tear up and cry over.
Well, I saw this morning an 11 and a 13-year-old shot and killed.
Yeah.
D.C.
Yeah.
11 and 13. It's you know, crazy.
And you know.
Yeah. How do you then, you got to cover the story and you got to somehow keep some sense of, okay, mm-hmm. I'm now uncoupling from this. Because I've got to live a sane life.
I mean, you have to compartmentalize, but I did break down on the air, live TV, maybe twice or three times here in D.C., talking about stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sports stories?
Well, I was fronting stories that I did. One of the lacrosse coach, she was diagnosed with brain cancer, and like the story came back to me after it ran. I did the story. I put the story together. But it was so emotional to see her hugging her daughter, yeah. you know, and knowing yeah. she didn't have much time to live. I came back and could not keep talking. And the other anchor had to jump in. Another story I did, a Gonzaga hockey player, his family, the team rising up. I mean, I'm just going to get weepy talking about this. This is why I'm not in
news.
I wouldn't do well. Yeah. That's why I went into sports. I started with news.
Yeah.
I know. But
like, look at me. I'm a
We did a story where there's kitten adoptions tomorrow, and you there's nothing like a great kitten adoption and a puppy adoption to make your heart warm.
Right. That's like the cleanse. That's like the juice cleanse of local news. Like, okay, we told you something horrible.
Now here's a kitten.
See, I used to always give Carol grief, Julie, about local television news going, can't you go find a tree to stand in front of on the sidewalk? But every now and then, there's like things that are amazing to stand in front of and go, holy shit, like the bus that blew up yesterday in the 9th Street tunnel.
Yeah, in the tunnel. That flame, that was crazy. People were stuck for hours there.
A whole city commuter bus that was diesel just blew up, burned to a crisp, shut down the tunnel. Mm-hmm. Who knows when that tunnel's going to be open again, by the way. That's a major thoroughfare in the city. That's one you want to be like, I'm here live at the 9th Street Tunnel. Holy shit, look at that fire back there.
The crazy thing is that bus had just been serviced in March. And
they took
all the buses that were within that same kind of bus. They took them off. There's like 21 buses. They took them off to all be like triple checked to make sure they're okay before they go back out on the roads again.
You weren't out there for that, were you?
No, Melanie Alnwick was.
Alnwick, yes.
But I was in the, you know, I'm now in the studio Wednesday through Friday.
Okay.
Doing the morning show, and then on the weekends we have the stream because they want to be 24/7, and streaming is the future. So they're streaming on weekends. If we're not on air, we're on the website, we're on the app, we're on Fox Local, and so they're really kind of beefing that up.
I mean, it's the only way to be relevant is to be live on social media and other platforms other than the regular cable.
I thought about live streaming today's lunch. Because I've done one live stream from here at the Power Lunch. It was good, actually. They got more people. I think at one point we were over 1,000 active viewers.
That's pretty good.
I'm like, you know, but part of it is, so I haven't seen either of you in a long time. I don't like making my guests uncomfortable. If I say, well, we're going to live stream this, you might be like...
I'd be like, okay, that's a
Tuesday. She's live all the time.
I know she is.
And I would be like... You know how at the end of each show, I'm like, can you take that part out?
Listen, I've been through this with Solly on a podcast last week. He's like, can
you
take this out?
I said that
unedited. No, you got to be unedited.
Yeah, he wanted something taken out. And I go, he was in the middle of our interview. Like, it was not like a warm-up segment. What are you doing?
You mean?
Like, well, I thought again about it. I don't know if that plays well.
Well, you know, it's just a cancel culture. So you want to make sure you're really careful. But also podcasts, you get a chance to be really real. We can just talk off the top of our head on subjects without thinking, which is dangerous in today's society, mm-hmm. and especially for Julie here, because she has a job that she wants to protect.
Exactly.
And that's why I asked my company, can I talk about this company and my job if it comes up? And they said, you know, you better not. Like, just be careful.
Like, why?
I don't really know. I mean, I think most people would say yes.
Because one wrong phrase such as cost instead of investment might get somebody to go, we never say cost.
Yeah.
We say you're investing in your home.
My thing is like, you know, if it's not something that you need to talk about, like you have to, the risk reward. And at one point it's just like, it's not really worth, might just not be worth it.
I learned that a long time ago. As I told some of my co-hosts, I'm like, let's see, if I say this, do I get an instant raise or a possible meeting through an angry email?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The chances of the latter are far greater.
Yeah, but who holds you accountable?
And
no one. You're your own boss.
You mean on a podcast?
All of us, all of his listeners and subscribers.
Society holds me accountable, because if I were to uncork some really retrograde views right now, believe me, it would get out there. Like, what?
And don't you want that kind of attention?
And as we've not
necessarily.
If it's out there and somebody wants to find it, they will find it.
Yes. Yes, they all find it. But the easier it is to latch onto and then lateral it anywhere else, it gets you in more trouble. That's why my Twitter handle says, I ain't here to fight the whole internet today.
But I also think that that's the world that we live in now. People want to. Almost, you know, especially
some people like fighting the whole internet.
Now, some people do. They, you're not going to be almost irrelevant in today's world in broadcast. And I think this might be jumping ahead to a couple of things. If you don't have a hot take on something, be it right or be it left, be it for or be it against, like that's what the jobs are going to, is somebody who is highly opinionated and isn't afraid to take the crush from the opposite side that doesn't agree with them. And that's not easy.
And if Twitter paid me for hot takes, I'd do more hot takes. But it doesn't pay me, so therefore you can hear my hot takes right here.
So they're mild
takes.
What's
the hottest take you have right now?
I have several contrarian takes. One would be a kill all instant replay in sports. It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. Getting it right is overrated.
What?
And people think I'm a lunatic for saying that. It is.
Well, nowadays,
sports are for fun. You know, there's good calls, bad calls. A ton of them are judgment calls. You can't undo.
Time out, because maybe I'm misremembering, but we've known each other long enough that when it was coming out, you were all for it.
Not true.
You were like, we can see at home. I kind of remember,
I don't know if that's true,
some sort of maybe sports reporters where you said, I remember a lot of what you said, as you know, where you at, what you hauling.
Where you at, what you hauling.
But I remember a show, and I remember the one time you did the whole vegetables thing at 7-Eleven. And all the other caffeine drinks we tried. Okay, so I'm going way back.
Yes.
But he said, I remember you're like, I'm at home and I see the truth. And the officials don't have the capability or the authority to go look at the replay while we're at home knowing.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
You were outraged.
Okay, maybe I said that, maybe not.
I mean,
Senator, I don't recall that. So
catch or no catch. It changes the course of games and seasons. And I mean, it's huge. That instant replay saves in that. But nowadays, you're having so much AI come in that's able to see exactly where it's at. Like, I would think that soon, you know, exactly that ball's going to ding if it's out of bounds or if it's not quite a catch. You know, you've got AI coming in zone in Major League Baseball that's, like, really trying to make the game quicker as well, and where that strike zone's at.
That's the thing. RoboUmp 3000, as I call the ABS challenge system, I'm actually a fan of, because it's binary, and it seems to be highly accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And you only get a certain number of challenges.
Right.
So it's not bogging down everything. Problem with replay last year, Isaiah Likely for the Ravens caught a touchdown in a key game against the Steelers. He got three steps inbounds in the end zone. They still said incomplete. It wasn't until after the season was over that Troy Vincent in the NFL said, you know what? We kind of missed that one.
Yeah.
Well, fucking thanks now.
Yeah,
doesn't help us at all.
I don't know how many times Ron Rivera, you know, when I was with that franchise for four seasons, would come in
the
and
Commanders.
Be just, yeah, the Commanders.
I was a franchise that shall not be named.
Well, I was just talking to somebody saying that I was hired by the Redskins, and then I became the football team, and then the Commanders. Yeah. I was like, I was a three-teamer while I was there.
Right.
But so many days he'd come in all ticked off, being like, we got a phone call afterwards. I said, they missed those plays. Those plays would have changed the course of the game and would have changed whether or not we won or lost. And if that call doesn't go your way, that's a lot of high money on the line.
I know.
To say, oh, sorry. And like, there's nothing they can do about it after that, but say, yeah, we got it wrong. So
but
in this,
perfection is impossible to achieve, though. So you're only going to get so close to it.
Right. In this environment of AI and of technology, we want to get as close to it as we can.
Listen,
to humans.
If AI were actually making the calls, not a human being in a dark room in New York City, then I'd kind of be for it, because that strips the human element out of it.
Well, his argument also was, is that, well, where's the punishment for these refs that keep getting it wrong?
Agreed.
Like, what's happened? Because they keep getting on the same games that they keep getting wrong. And he's like, give me somebody else that's going to get the call right.
What is the answer there? Do they get judged at the end of the season? Is that one?
They are graded.
At the end of the season, though, right? It's not game to game.
They are graded. Yeah. There was Devin Booker of the Suns got fined $35,000 for ripping the refs in their game against OKC because he got a technical after Alex Caruso said to the ref, hey, man, give him a technical. That's a T. And so the ref did. And Booker's like, what the fuck? Like, you can't just do that. And the NBA rescinded all three techs that were given to the Suns in the game, but they still fined Booker for speaking out.
Which
so it's like, whoa, what are we doing here?
Yeah, anyway. They hold all the power.
Yeah, all right.
That's what it boils down to.
I want
to
turn
Was that one of the topics?
No.
That was on my list.
I want to turn this to Carol, my dear friend who I adore.
Well, I don't mean to, he was just looking
at Let's get our orders fired in, and then we can continue talking here.
Okay.
And I will edit this out.
Are we ordering on?
We're going to order on air.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Dennis, right? All right,
You're the best.
Okay, you know what I want? I'm going to jump in front of the ladies since they're deliberating. Could I get the filet, medium rare plus, splash of fries, no veggies, splash. Yes. No bisque because we'll be talking. Can you gals do without appetizers? Do you need appetizers?
Yeah, no, I don't need it. It'll be more than I need to eat.
Okay, very good. Today's power lunch at the Palm is...
this is what we order off of? Oh. Oh, up here. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so I was on the wrong side. Okay.
I'll order from the Power Lunch area. Yeah. Yes, there you go. Today's Power Lunch brought to you by The Palm. Come on in, Tyson's Corner, and get yourself a Power Lunch. Believe you me, it is delicious, and it is really about the same price as many other cheaper restaurants that don't have as such delicious food. And they'll take great care of you here at The Palm.
I like it. The Palm's
such a
good,
great
man.
Commercial. You have a good voice for that.
Chicken
parm, please.
That's a good choice, ma'am.
Can I make like my own Caesar salad with the steak, the filet?
Done.
Thank you. Boom. Time out. Copying her. Yes, please.
Okay. So that.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Oh no, medium for me, please. Yes,
medium rare.
Carol, you're down to one timeout left, just so you know on the podcast.
So the Caesar salad with the
steak. You have burned two timeouts very quickly.
She's going
here.
Through them, isn't she?
I was looking for a salad. I didn't see it. And
I know,
I've had
that's
it before.
What, he saw me looking over the salad. He's like, no, you need to go to this side.
I think it's,
All right,
I've had it's too heavy for chicken parm right now, but
right.
It's my favorite, not it's my favorite thing here, but I do love it. I've had it before.
And it's huge, too. It's the size of
I have to go to an appointment after this.
Chicken parm.
Size of a catcher's mitt. So, all right. Let's talk Carol for a second.
Yeah, so we were just... Okay.
Julie, I reached out to you because I thought I had lost Carol.
Yeah.
I said, Carol is not returning my texts. I don't know what's going on. I hope I didn't do anything to jeopardize our friendship, but
That's not what you said.
I also understand... Oh, really? I say that bitch ain't leaving. That bitch leaving me on red. What the hell?
I did.
It's inexcusable. His love for you is true, but the PC version is, that you were ignoring
I love
him.
That
you were hurting his feelings.
Yeah, soft. Give me a soft pillow bite punch. I'm so sorry.
Listen,
I
understood that you are undergoing a lot of life changes, that you are engaged. You have moved from one side of the river here in D.C. to the other, which nobody ever does.
I know.
Congratulations.
In Virginia now.
Yeah,
Northern
you're a Virginian
Virginia.
Now.
Oh, I did the same.
So I wanted to give you this space to have your life. And maybe you're just was like, you know what? It's a new season. I'm moving ahead. But I'm so glad you're back.
Thank
girl.
You. I'll just give you a couple of excuses, right? Some disclaimers.
It's okay.
Hopefully my Iowa charm comes through. And just so you know, the reason I'm here today is because I was listening to Zabe on some morning radio show that you were on. And I was just...
On JFK?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, I just miss him so much. And I know there's some text there I need to respond to. And I went back to look and I was like, oh my God. I closed a business, right?
Yes. You're Well and Wonder Studio.
Yep. So I was running that for 4 or 5 years. It was heartbreaking and traumatic, right? Mm-hmm. So that was trauma. I moved, trauma. 2 days after my business closed, I tore my ACL. It was, what day is today? The first?
That.
Yeah, you didn't know that about me. I have torn ACL today. I did not surgically replace it. I went into a deep, dark depression.
I don't know. I don't blame
you. So if I'm ghosting you, it's probably because I was really sad.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. And it was a really hard summer. And I've climbed out of it. Hugs. I know. I've climbed out of it. I got a good job with great insurance. I got a great PT. I'm graduating from PT on Friday. And
so
I'm
you got your ACL fixed?
No, I didn't surgically. I'm going to Lindsey Vonn it. I'm going back to pickleball with a torn ACL.
Well, you know what happens there. You know how that story
ends. I'm 50-50.
Don't play pickleball.
I'm either going to have surgery or not. So okay. Going back is like if I do it again, I'm passing the tests I need. Now, I know a lot of athletes who've torn it and come back. I mean, look at I'm hoping to be Adrian Peterson, but he had restorative surgery. I just am doing it with
him. Now that you got insurance, why don't you get it fixed? You're athletic.
That's what I thought. That's why I got a full-time job. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, get it fixed because you need an ACL.
My doctor, what surgeon says this? This was somebody who was a commander's doctor who said, and I've had a couple of them because I wanted second opinions, who said, there's a 50-50 chance that because most of the people you have surgery on would be delighted to be where you are right now.
Oh, 50-50 chance it's no better?
50-50 chance to never need surgery and still be able to play pickleball. I don't know about skiing. Yeah. But
oh, God. Carol, pickleball. Can we get you off the pickleball?
No, that's the dumbest game ever. That's my partner. That's my fiance. We're pickleball partners.
Oh, no
way. That's why the depression hit so true because I was left behind with no business and no job.
Is this a pickleball romance?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, we were learning together. So it was like our first few dates and stuff. Aww. I love pickleball so much. It is the only time in my life that I can remember what it's like to be a kid. We are just playing. And it's a sport that's accessible. It's very social, but not as much cardio as tennis. It's literally, you can be terrible at it and still have the best time. And it's free. There are courts in your neighborhood, I'm sure.
You know, I just read a stat that said 69% of pickleball couples divorce after 1 year of time. Are you sure you want to go down this road?
There are so many couples now I know that don't play with each other.
Stay out of the kitchen, Carol. You're in the kitchen.
That's right. That's right.
Serve it harder, will you?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, do not tell me what to do. Like... You stay in your own lane. Don't get over on my side. Yeah, we went through some of that early on. And I had to tell him there's no in-game coaching. We can strategize after. Because we went in some tournaments and stuff. And we were learning together. He's way surpassed me by now. Like he's gotten he has other partners. He has other fun. I launched his brand. Like he's a mortgage guy. So I launched him while I was off work. I launched his brand.
A pickleball brand?
Yeah. So a pickleball.
Is he a pickle influencer?
So he is called now the pickleball mortgage guy. And we've had events and we get people together for pickleball. And he sells his mortgages to the community.
That's actually smart. That's smart to leverage pickleball as a entry. Yeah. To selling mortgages.
It's basically because you know so many people. It's such an inclusive community. I mean, literally, the whole neighborhood feels like comes out. And you just want them to know, hey, if you need help, call me. Maybe I can help you.
Carol, it's a joy to have you back. Pickleball.
Oh, yeah, smashing rates.
Smash.
That's what we came up with the test.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know.
So that's why when I said...
We're going to dink the inspector
I have this
deal.
Entrepreneur mind now. After my business, after doing that for 5 years, I'm coming in and I'm like, you know what, Zabe? We talked about this 5 years ago. I'm finally ready. Let's run. Let me help and
you
run
do
your
have
business.
You have a great entrepreneurial mind and you've got great hustle.
You got your own logo, which I love.
We have a logo. Mm-hmm. We have hats.
How much merch do you have? Is it for sale?
It's kind of.
See, this is what I would do. We would get that merch going. We'd put it on the website. We need to sell that stuff.
Okay. And she's producing you. Look at
Look at that. Yes.
She just hired herself.
I did. All right. Like I need another job right now.
All right. So the elephant in the room with you gals is this Diana Rossini, Mike Vrabel story. Yep. And you guys can speak as much to it or as little to it as you want, because I know that you worked along Diana at NBC4 back in the day.
Yeah.
And Julie, I don't know your relationship with her.
I knew her, would see her at events.
Did you ever work together?
No, we did not work together specifically. Okay. But
right. Carol,
more
you
than
did.
Familiar.
Yeah. So at NBC4, when I was there, so Lindsay Zarniak left. I came in and it was like full time or nothing. I had done maybe 6 months and I had to commit to full time or nothing. So I said nothing. And then they hired Diana to replace me. Happily left. Use me as a freelancer whenever you want. My kids were little. So then shortly after she got there, and she was really raw and green, she hadn't had much experience, Helly left. So then they called me back in. So we got to work together for a little bit before she went to ESPN.
Okay.
So we never really worked together. It's kind of like she was on or I was on, right? So I don't have any, I'm not really close to her, and I don't have any like situations or insights on her reputation or her work ethic or any of that. I can just tell you that I feel absolutely sick about anyone having to go through this publicly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Like mm-hmm. I don't care who you are, but I don't know what's true, what's not true. I at first when the story hit and one of our old producers had texted me the link, I was like, this is a non-story. Everybody just leave it alone.
That's what they wanted. That's what
they
said.
Let's just move on. It was an icky. It had the ick factor right away. And I'm like, no one's business. You know, they're both married, whether they're friends or whether this is just her source, whatever happened behind closed doors. I don't want to know. And then as I thought about it and the story had legs and I was trying to think about, and I've talked about it with a couple of friends and coworkers. And first of all, I send my heart out to her because I don't think... You know, I don't think anyone should have to go through this publicly, and I just, a lot of strength. I haven't reached out to her directly, but I think it does strike a chord with media ethics, and I think it does speak a lot to the folks who are covering sports right now and how we value insider access, speed, and doing what it takes to get there. And it also strikes a chord with how we respond to female sports journalists, how they're judged differently. And there's this just a wide range of emotions in me that all I can think of is I'm so grateful I'm not still in it. You know, I'm so grateful that because I could see the way Diana and a lot of female journalists and Julie, you were game day, so not as much you, but people who are trying to be relevant. It's all about getting the inside scoop out as fast as you can and getting as many followers and as many likes and as many scoops as you can. Whereas I was raised, you had to use caution the way I was trained. Mm-hmm. Caution to sources. I had a lot of scoops that mm-hmm. I didn't ever tweet about because I was waiting to develop more of a source and integrity with it. And so I don't know if that even has to play into this like sensational story. All I can say is that I wish it would go away. I wish
it'll run its course. I don't think it's done on Vrabel's side, though.
I don't think it's done on either side. I do agree with you. The fact that this is playing out publicly, and what really gets to me, too, is how many people are quick to jump on this and bash and tear down and try to destroy and try to dig into it. Like, that shows a human side of nature that I don't like. That says, oh, let us point our finger and dig into somebody else's dirt, into their skeletons. I think the problem they went into is they tried to blow it off as if it was nothing. And when you do that and you try to lie and cover it up, and then, you know, that's not the case, you know, inevitably in this world, like we said, something will always live on. So I think that's the unfortunate part, why it's picked up steam and picked up legs. And then I just hate how people then start jumping into the rumor mills of like her son might have been, you know, Vrabel's kid and all this stuff. And it's like, you don't know what's truth or not, but the way people are jumping on this story with so much ferocity, it's just like, that makes me sad that's the world that we live in, that we want to tear somebody down so bad.
The photos that came out just before the draft from 6 years ago at the bar in New York City, which implied, oh, this probably has been going on for a lot longer than people think. That added a whole nother dimension to everything. And a lot of people believe that that was orchestrated for the maximum disruption and damage to both Rossini and Vrabel.
So hit job, right? That's it. That, the whole time I felt like this is such a hit job.
Why were those pictures not out? And then there's also more pictures that came out at a casino with them. But why were those pictures?
Why were they not out until now?
If they were also saying that nobody was at the bar but them, like those, somebody knew who they were taking those pictures.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. I would tell, like, they can think, oh, nobody knows who we are. We're just a big meathead and some, you know, petite woman. People know who people are. People know who Diana Rossini is, and they sure as fuck know NFL coaches. They know what they look like. Even just a big guy, they're like, is that a player? Is that a coach? Who is that? So they were going to be spotted. Here's a take that I don't know if this comes off badly or not, but I'll put it out there. I think they were in love. And I think that adds an interesting angle to it because the conventional wisdom is, okay, she's sleeping with him for access. No. I think they were really in love, which can happen. You work around somebody, you get to know somebody, and you really fall for it.
Does it change the narrative for you?
I'm not saying
the way they were holding their hands. See, like all this speculation stuff. You're
well,
like,
well, listen here. Let's do this.
Plenty of here, here, by come the on. Way, Kara, time out.
See, now we're
look
dead.
At me though.
Hold on.
No, it's the picture.
No, don't do that because he's married. And it all,
right, I can't do that. It was screenshot. No, but like I said, the finger photo from Sedona was the most incriminating
that's
of
right,
all.
That's right.
Because
photo.
Who does that?
That's right.
But yeah, I think what happened was when he had to come out again and say, I'm going to therapy instead of day three of the draft, which totally contradicted her very defiant stance when she quit her job and said, I'm not going to put up with this public inquiry. I think that broke her heart. And that's why she deleted her Twitter account.
That's what broke my heart for her because I know how important that was. And I saw her build it up from nothing.
Well, she can get it all back within 30 days. You just have to log back on again.
Then when she does that, it's going to bring everything back around again, though. I don't know.
I think she's going to pop on, reactivate it, maybe pop off again.
Honestly, if I was her, I would change complete course of my life. I did a little bit. It's like a two mountain shape.
No,
you're on a mountain. You're climbing it. Some scandal, some cancer scare, some divorce catapult you off the first mountain and you get onto a different, you're in the valley.
No, she's.
You're on a different mountain and one is about relationships, being in safe spaces, being around people you love and trust and having enjoyment in your life. And I feel like, you know, that's she what will she
be,
needs now.
She will be really good in a role as a sports media personality, podcast, host, something like that.
Will she ever?
As a reporter or as an insider, that's done.
I was going to say, is she ever going to be embraced into the industry again?
Yes.
Or is she going to be?
She already has friends in the industry. I mean, EB for the Junkies said on air, he's like, look, whatever she says publicly, I'm going to back her because she's my friend.
Yeah.
Stu Gotts with, you know, Lebatard, yeah, said, I'll offer
her.
You a job.
Yeah.
Pro football PFT talk commentator says, you know, this has been tough for her. He's close to her. And she's really good. She's smart. She's witty. She's sassy. She's Italian. She knows sports. She'll have a future. But it's going to be a hellish road getting there. Because it's got to wind through all of the, you know.
I don't feel comfortable even speculating, condemning, excusing any of that. The story just makes me, you know, super sad.
Yeah.
Again, my biggest take is I think people are rotten people that they just want to jump on and destroy somebody.
I'm going to
no matter what you've done, like, come on, we can take a higher road to that. We can be better than that.
I'm going to tell you one fact though that She like took over for Dan Helly and she came in like a ball of fire covering the Redskins.
She was ambitious.
She was ambitious and aggressive and she worked hard. And she wasn't, you know, beloved by everybody.
No.
Who would love, you know, you're someone who's coming in and all longtime Redskins reporters. And here comes this woman who's coming from, I think, North Carolina or something. Doesn't really know the
Jersey.
Team or the history. No. Was
she working in North Carolina?
Yeah, I think so. Right. Anyway. So she'd been their beat reporter. They hire me back. I think she has now Wednesdays off or something. And I'm always coming in. My first day back on the beat, I walked in and like a ton of the beat reporters stood up and applauded. Not because I was, it was me or anything about my coverage. It just wasn't her. And I took it as a little sexist, as somebody who was that good at their job that they were threatened. And so I was kind of like, whatever, no, you know, whatever. But I just remember being like, she's that good that they're happy she's not here right now because she was beating them. in all sorts of ways. And then there was speculation about all sorts of things. And I'm just like, she's doing what she's got to do to climb the ladder she wants to climb. You know what I'm...
All right. Well, when we come back...
It's uncomfortable.
When we come back, Carol's going to drive. I'm going to sit in the... I'm going to sit shotgun, okay. Throw beer cans out the window.
Hey!
Carol's going to drive. Julie, you can get out anything. If you have a topic or two that you're burning on, you want to like, hey, did you ever see this? You know, what do you think of that? Just fire it in there, and I will just go along for the ride. But first, I got to ask you guys, is it super awkward that I brought out the headsets for a tableside podcast like this?
I like it. Opposed to what?
I like my two hands.
Stick mics and headphones. Because my thinking was, these mics, you get the mic positioned, it's never out of position.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn your head.
Mm-hmm.
You can lean back. It's more comfortable.
Right.
It just looks dorky in a tableside setting because it's like we're, you know, Jim McKay and, you know, Al Michaels doing some kind of broadcast.
See, well, I literally was going there. So on game day, you know, I got to do the 2-hour pregame show in the booth,
you
postgame and all that stuff.
So we wore
this. I would be wearing this headset for like 6 hours a day. And it instantly was like, oh, it's kind of giving me like, you know.
You get flashbacks?
Yeah, I was getting like flashbacks. I'm like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look good, but I think it's easier to set up. It's less cluttered on the table. The sound quality, which I've been chastised about on these, you know, restaurant podcasts, is the best it'll be.
I like it because there's a lot of chitter-chatter going back there, and it probably you don't hear that as much.
True. These mics are very tuned to just what's in front of your face. So as long as you guys don't hate it.
No, I don't hate
this
it.
This might be the new norm.
Okay, well, just so you know, there is a higher level. When I was working with MLB, we did, you know, this post-game shows in center field gate.
Yeah.
There are two IFB plugs and still a mic that
comes around. Is that the tiny mic that sticks to your cheek?
Tiny mic that's like neutral color, so you can't really tell. Yeah, I love it.
You can still see it, though. It looks like a giant wart on your face.
Yeah, it's probably really expensive, too.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. I think I've priced it.
So you need a producer for that. Yeah. I'll get us a deal.
No, I need a sponsor for that.
There you go.
All right, we're back with more at the Palm. It is a Power Lunch Friday with Julie Donaldson and Carol Maloney.
Whoop, whoop.
Carol wants to talk about her favorite athlete of all time, Caitlin Clark from Iowa.
Yeah, so...
you an Iowa girl, basketball player yourself, you love her. You know, Caitlin Clark just kind of punched out of this incredible orbit of publicity and fame she was orbiting in when she got hurt last summer, and then the injury lingered. I think part of it was kind of bullshit. She just needed to get away from things. And interest and media coverage of the WNBA plummeted.
I don't know about that.
It did.
I didn't.
No, I noticed it because as a sports fan, I'm like, man, the oxygen just left the room without Caitlin Clark.
Well,
it's good to have her back and the season's beginning. And they got a much better deal than they did before.
Yeah. So, you know, it's tough for WNBA players. So, first of all, transparency. Yeah. Caitlin Clark, who went to my high school, who played for Lisa Bluter at Iowa, who was my coach at Drake. Dowling. It was in Des Moines, Iowa.
Dowling High in Des Moines.
So her mother is sisters with my very best friend to this day. We went to high school. You know, we were basketball teammates. We were the Nizzies.
Nice.
And her mom, Anne, was always, you know, she's 2 years older than us and stuff. So I just know the family really well. My mom went to a dance with her dad. So I have some personal, you know, just connections. And I want to say, so everything I say is biased. I love this girl. I love the family. I love what she's done for basketball. I think she's earned it. The thing with the WNBA is once you get through the national championship, she's immediately into WNBA. So sophomore season is always really difficult for these players who've had zero break, because then you go right into the leagues. It's another little unfair disadvantage for women that they don't have time to rest.
Not only that, but then the rest of the league was beating the shit out of her.
Yeah, every
that
game.
That didn't help either.
Yeah, every game. This rookie is getting all the headlines.
There's a lot of dynamic there. But
she looks great. She looks older. She looks more buff than ever. I don't know if you've seen her. Yeah. So
do you lift, bro?
Yeah. So she. I'm excited to see. I hear she's super healthy, and I'm excited to see what happens. And you know, it's great for the game. I think if it crosses over to just sports fans in general, no matter what your gender is that you're interested, You know, and the fact she's on national TV, it's must-see TV. Like I said, I'm excited to see what she can do. I mean, she can light it up. She's Steph Curry, kind of like, let's just see. She's in transition. You never know what's going to happen. Is she going to shoot from the half court? Yeah, line?
Shoot
maybe.
From three or drive and dish.
You never know. You don't know.
Yeah. All right. The Zabecast now powered by Carol Maloney, who's in charge in the driver's seat. Carol, take it away.
Well, you know, I just had a couple of ideas when we were coming in, stuff I wanted to ask you about over the time that we have not connected. Like when Washington Post sports section went, you know, shuttered its doors, was a couple months ago. How did that affect
6 months
you?
Ago.
To me, that was the standard. That was especially Sundays. How did that, when they shut down their sports section completely, how did it even change?
I mean, it took away the center of gravity of sports in this town. It's like a black hole. All the gravity gets sucked in because we in the sports chattering business, sports radio, would rely on the reporters and the columnists being out there in the locker room, traveling at games, getting the sound bites, the interviews from the coaches, the players, etc. We would then feed off of them. We are the guys with the guns and the duck blind as the ducks got chased out from the beat reporters and blah, 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 blah. We'd shoot at them. So if there's nobody out there in the wild covering this stuff, how are you going to know what's going on? And have you seen they've started to hire back a few select reporters for the sports section?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking dummies.
What do you think, Julie?
I think it's a world that, I mean, a lot of this is a dying business. And every network and publication is trying to find ways where they can cut costs, right? And that's at the expense of people. And I think they're finding, to your point, that there's some things you can't totally just eliminate because people care. And if you looked at that Commanders draft party that they had yesterday, like, people care. People want to be able to go and get information on the teams that they love, the players that they love. And when you totally eliminate it, you're not doing your readers, you know, a service there. And not everybody wants to pay for The Athletic. Not everybody wants to have the paywall. Well, I guess you have to pay for The Post, too. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you have to pay for.
The Athletic is very cheap. It's a couple bucks a month. Yeah. I pay it, you know.
So, for me, I still think, you know, because the question, is it relevant? Is it outdated? Local sports, local news coverage?
No.
But you know what it is? It's just changed. The way we consume the information has changed. Now we rely, you're talking about, you used to chase the conventional stories out there. Like, you would see the stories, they would frame the story, and then we would chase after it with our takes and our opinions, right? Now it's gone to individual influencers, personalities. That's where those are like the journalists now, where they have no standards and no gatekeepers and no institutions backing it and making sure their sources are correct. Now they're the ones being, you know, putting the story out there. And then local sports was chasing that. I think the direction changed.
And now a lot of places will give you incentives. Like, if you're a reporter and your social media becomes viral,
that's
you
good.
Know, and post it, you go out there, like, there's incentives of that, gives you a perk at work, and it gives you, you know, an extra ratings. They're including that into your success of your social media post.
Even worse is that with a lot of athletes now, they've got friendfluencers. So in other words, they're influencers who serve as quasi-media, but they're so tight with the athletes, you're getting a super curated, super protected, sanitized sort of view of everything around that guy or gal.
And
so you're not getting actual reporting at all.
No, and they want to control their own narrative. That's the world we're in, of this NIL
I don't
thing.
Blame it's the like, athletes you know, for doing it. I'm just saying it doesn't serve the public very well.
I think it also makes them a little softer, because when you're a true journalist in there and you're asking difficult questions, like, you know, you have to go for that. But now if you're losing some of that, it becomes whatever narrative, and they become a little, you know, softer, and they want the media friendly and the things that are only going to be, you know.
You got to piss some people off every now and then. You got to be kicked off a post-game show on Comcast because you asked Mark Brunell, for the love of God, will you please bench yourself?
I mean, I got scolded when I was with the Redskins for asking difficult questions. At first it was, hey, this will be great. You're going to prep our guys because you come from that world. You're going to prep them from what they're going to get in the media to you're a team reporter. You need to like give us some softballs.
Give me an example of something you were chided for asking.
I don't know. Where come the hell on. Is the run game?
That,
I don't know.
That
is your job in jeopardy?
No, I mean, I of course not. I never would. That's not my personality to ever ask like that. But I would be like, hey, you know what? You find success when, you know, your back's getting a certain amount of touches in a game. So when you go away from that and then the game gets away from you, like, why are we not sticking with the run game?
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't want to be challenged on that.
Once Joe Gibbs snapped at me on air about, because I kept asking him about the shotgun, when he first came back in 03, Gibbs had not realized that the league had changed a lot and every team had the shotgun. When he first coached, only the Cowboys used that formation. And I was like, hey, coach, you can work some shotgun in this week? He finally got so pissed, and this is Joe Gibbs pissed, being the man of God that he is. He said, "Dad, I'm going to put you back there in the shotgun someday."
And that
was his way of like saying, shut the fuck. God.
Yeah, and you know the players didn't like a lot of the difficult questions from that either. You know, like I said, I think that it's a little softer. And the athletes now will tell you that it's a much softer world. These athletes coming up have been cradled and coddled and told they're the best thing, and they don't handle criticism or critiques very well.
All true, but it's a problem and it's an evolution. How do we deal with it?
Yeah,
but there's things that you know and others who are close to the team know that are not something you could report on. But they're relevant to what's going on. Like Josh Doctson, who was a huge bust at wide receiver, was homesick from people telling me. Right. I'm like, any guy that's homesick because he's from Texas, you're in the NFL, motherfucker. Get with the program, you know? That told me he was soft. There were stories about Chase Young's drinking problem, going to MGM Grand, National Harbor all the time. Can't report on that, but it's like, really? You get sources saying, and ladies, obviously, you know, Dwayne Haskins, and may he rest in peace, but just sort of the things where you go, I don't think this guy gets it.
No, I actually, this very table, I did a dinner with the Haskins family.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, for his birthday.
Oh,
yeah.
That's tough. Yeah. Very sad ending, obviously, for the young man. And the NFL's a tough place, obviously.
Well, and mental health is a big thing, too. And I know his family's pushing a lot of that, saying that he had some mental health issues and it wasn't addressed properly. And, you know, things get to where they're at, which is tough. But I do think, going back to your thing, we are in a world where influencers are now the news
makers.
And where we're consuming it is on TikTok. And the younger generation's not reading a newspaper. The younger generation is not watching traditional television like we used to.
No.
Literally, the people that are watching traditional television, they are dying off. And the younger generation is getting all their information on TikTok. So it's coming at them in 20 to 30 seconds. And if they want more information from that, they'll go dig and find it to wherever it is on the internet or off of their phones. You know, so that becomes the thing. The bigger influencer, the bigger the TikTok stories, the bigger, you know, that's where the information and how we're consuming it.
Younger
days.
People are also not watching sports.
No.
Nearly
they're watching
as much,
moments.
Carol. Do you ever wonder about, will the youths of America still love sports like we did? Do your boys love watching sports?
It's relevant for them. Like, we love Jaden Daniels. So it's a big thing in our house. And then, you know, the national championship game or the Super Bowl or stuff like that. But in terms of connection, having some connection and knowing who to trust, knowing what team to trust, and that would lead me right to my next segment.
All right, next
because
topic.
Commanders, you know, the draft is going on, all that stuff. I mean, do we hope? Do we trust? What are the expectations there? I mean, I think anytime you have a Jaden Daniels, and now we're going into, there's a very big sense of urgency to get him the protection that he needs to have the kind of success that we've built around him. And I don't know if they're going to do that this draft. I don't know when you're airing this, so I don't want to like date ourselves. But
well, we're airing the day after the first round. They took Sonny Styles.
I
approve of. They need to do something on the defense
because
it was so horrible.
I just think expectations have been built for him faster than stability. And then I think they did that with RG3, and we saw what happened there. And so I just get triggers of what's going on.
I don't think, Julie, he's RG3 in
any way, shape, or form.
I hate the comparisons of that. And why does RG3 have to weigh in on every single thing as if he's relevant to every single thing out there? I'm sorry, RG. Like, I actually, you know, I'm not a big fan of him at all.
Few people are. Yeah. You know who is a big fan of him? RG3
is a big fan of RG3. He inserts himself in everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I will say this. When I was, before I even saw, I was listening to or watching, you know, some college football game, I was like, this analyst is pretty good. And I'll give him his credit. I thought he was pretty good. But I just hate the way that he portrays himself on social media as if he's like the end-all, be-all, the best thing in the world. And when they welcomed him back at the Commanders, I thought he was a terrible pick to be that guy that to like, because he, and they're like, oh, he was greeted by boos and cheers. I'm like, did you not think that that's how he was going to be greeted?
Oh, for the alumni or reunion game?
No, it was like one of the first, like, it was like the first big thing. They welcome back in. He goes on the stage. I said, if you want to do that, I was like, go get somebody who this whole stadium's going to stand up and cheer for. One of the guys that hasn't been here, get, you know, get Daryl Green to be that guy.
Right.
And they get RG3, and it's like, okay, because he took us to the champion. You know,
so it was a mixed reception?
Yes, it was.
To say the least?
It was. Like, we thought that was a home run. I'm like, well, who is in the room talking about this? You have the wrong people in the room. If you think
that
it's
was under
be
the old
run.
Old regime, right?
No, this was with Ron Rivera's
Harris?
Years. This is when I was there.
Well,
they're supposed
okay.
to have.
Well, Rivera's. I call that the old regime. That's Danny. Regime.
Yes, yes, yes. Danny's that's still regime, yes. Yeah. That's still the yes. So okay, old. So old regime.
Yeah. We're so old. Yeah. So just the question, like, are you trusting this team? Because you can't have patience when you have a Jaden Daniels and the injuries he had in his sophomore season. Whatever.
I
he's
would
our
say
franchise quarterback for the now, and it's got to happen now.
This new group is doing so many things right. It is such a breath of fresh air. This team has a fighting chance now to be really good for a sustained period of time, which they never had before. Before, they had to get super lucky to be half decent.
Yeah.
Now they've got a chance. I don't think, Julia, has the Harris group in your eyes done anything that's a big misstep yet?
No. And, you know, I mean, I'm not in the building anymore, but from those that are there, they say you'd love working for this team now. You'd love what Mark Klaus is doing as the president of the organization. You would like, you know, and even he came in, I was talking, it's like there's still some PTSD from the regime before him. And I was like, raise my hand. I'm like, I can attest
you know
to that.
It.
I was there. I was in that building. And as much as things changed, they didn't change, which is very frustrating because you want the best efforts to try to like make things better. But under, you know, under Josh Harris, Mark Ein, Mitch Rales, you know, and the other 18 owners that they have there, I do believe that they're going in the right direction. But I do think Adam Peters, you know, he's got to get the draft right as the next going to the next few days. Having the oldest roster in the NFL, we know that's never going to work because when guys go down, we saw that they didn't have the depth.
Yeah.
And you can sit there and say, yes, injuries, they added up. They were one of the most injured teams in the NFL last year. But, okay, who's your backups? You're only as good as your backups are. And they need more at almost every position. But you've got to protect Jane, to your point. That O-line's got to be able to stand up. You got to have, I think, you know, the right weapons to go to for them as well. And then the defense, yeah, I mean, they were, what the, I mean, five wins. They
30.
Were worst.
31st or 32nd in almost every category.
Yeah. It hurts absolutely most because atrocious. Of the expectations going into last season.
That's,
and that's where we are now. Like, do we trust that they're going to, that the leadership is going to lead them to the where we're hoping they go? Or are we just now in hoping land?
There is no trust, Carol. There's only faith. Faith is believing in something that cannot be seen nor verified.
And this
you
is
know that.
And this is the season of hope.
It really is.
Wait, I thought that was Christmas.
Hope. So my next topic, one more topic.
Two more, and then we're going to wrap
it. Okay, two more topics.
You've got Windows to install. I've got a tea time to make.
And I was up at
and
2 a.m.
Julie is almost out of
this
gas.
This is a silly question that we've debated many times, but I wanted to check back in because when I last left the sports landscape.
Ginger or Marianne? I've always been a ginger guy.
No. When I left the D.C. sports landscape, the Caps had won. The Nationals had won. It was like we're feeling like a sports town, you know, and then you take a step back and it's a transient area. It just doesn't feel like a sports town.
Well, losing your sports paper, the Post sports section hurts.
That's a big one.
Hey, hurts perceptionally,
I mean,
big time.
The D.C. Defenders, you know, they won last year. And the Spirit.
So my question was, what team is owning the city in terms of sports town?
I think if the Commanders can get back to being good, that's going to help
a lot.
The Nats are off to an interesting start because they're scoring runs by the buckets, but they're giving them up by even bigger buckets. Mm-hmm. So they're still in the middle of a long rebuild that who knows when it's going to take shape.
I'm fascinated by that rebuild as well. I mean, what, you've got a young skipper, you got a young president. They're taking a different approach. They're being very analytical. They're in the development of players. Yep. Don't bring in big vets. We want to like groom them, grow them kind of a thing. I'm very fascinated to see how this is going to work out for them.
But the ownership wants to sell the team. And they put them on. They put a yard sale sign in the front yard. The Learners, then they took it out. And there's a possible lockout coming, so that's going to be interesting. But the Wizards are also curious because they've got so many assets now, and they got these two veterans they traded for. One of whom, Anthony Davis, might want to get traded. Who knows? They have a chance to maybe turn the corner and be good. Do you think the Wizards, Carol, turning it to God. You? Can ever be good, like legit good.
I can hope because I think that could do wonders for the city, for the community. It's a basketball, like just a hotbed of talent and passion.
Agreed.
And I think just like the Commanders and them going back to the new stadium, I don't know what that's going to do at RFK when that happens, but I think it would be a whole influx of energy and excitement for the young people to make it to be appointment viewing because we don't seem to have that right now.
All right, last topic.
Last topic is, this is kind of something for you, Zabe, and I have to look this up, but there was a sports bar concept in Arlington.
I saw this.
So I did a little research too. So Washingtonian reported this, maybe other people and stuff, but I saw this and I was like, I wonder if someone like Zabe would go to DC area's first women's sports bar.
It's called
Westover Taco.
Yep.
It had new ownership changed, and she made it into a women's sports mecca. She has the four more TVs, so I don't know how many she has. The hashtag Watch Women Win, all the signed jerseys, and it really is kind of a hotbed for women's sports. And then I looked up other places that have done it because they're not the first. There's the Sports Bra in Portland. There is a bar of their own in Minneapolis. There is Rough and Tumble Pub in Seattle. And there is Whiskey Girl Tavern in Chicago. Does this interest you?
I mean, I like
sports bra.
I should contact them and do a podcast down there.
Heck yeah.
What it's all
you need
about.
A producer for that.
You want to? Do you want to help broker that?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Let's do that. Let's go down there. Look, I think Eddie, obviously, if there's a lot of women there, that's attractive to men, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And as long as the bartenders know how to get the fucking game you want on the TV above the bar, that's the biggest thing that pisses people off about going to sports bars. Hey, you know, the Celtics game is on. Could you get that? Oh, I don't know the remote. Oh, it's my manager who does that. I'll get back to you in a second. And you're going, oh my God, I can't believe this. So, I'm not against putting women's sports up, you know, on the TVs.
Women's sports. Only,
yeah,
that's
out.
What
it's
I'm
only?
Telling you. I think so. I think
he's
it's
there.
Only.
He's there and for Caitlin Clark, and he's out.
I'm hoping they do all pickleball. Have you ever watched women play pickleball?
Those
athletes, that's so good, so fun.
I think that if it's only women's sports, I think that feels more like a last place fantasy punishment having to go.
See,
to that
yeah,
bar.
I know. I think it can help. It will do wonders because you maybe if you go, we're going to try it out.
Well, what would
we'll see what you think. See
listen,
your take.
I know
you'll be honest.
I watch a large amount of the LPGA because I'm a golf fan, so I'll watch that. I went to the Solheim Cup when it was here a couple of years ago.
Now, what about like you know Wimbledon? You know,
women's tennis is great.
Yeah,
women's tennis
like that.
The sport scales for women tennis better than many other sports do. So
go women.
Go women.
Go women. I actually do hate the fact to. I don't like drawing a line in gender. I don't really want to go to a place that only has women.
Well, do you know who loves men's sports a lot is women.
Like to me, it is a little bit of trying to take an idea as a business owner and having your niche and everything. I hope we can support it in different ways and it's successful and kind of grows around the country. But then I also hope that they do put the biggest game on when it's there because that will broaden their audience.
All right, shameless plug time. Julie Donaldson can be seen on Fox 5 in the mornings, a couple days a week. What else you want to promote? Social media?
Sure.
Platforms, Twitter feeds, Twitch feeds.
I got the X.
What do you
I got the IG.
Okay.
I have to look it up.
How's your TikTok game?
My TikTok game stinks.
Stinks. Okay.
Yeah. I'm at Julie Donaldson _ on X and _ Julie Donaldson on Instagram.
Okay.
There's a woman who also has my name on Instagram, and she's writes books in England, children's books, and I get tagged for all the time. She wrote this book called The Gruffalo. And I'm like, oh, somebody's tagging their cute little children on my feed, but that's not me.
I think I've ever asked you this. Is Julie Donaldson on your driver's license, or is that a TV name?
Nope. I wanted to change it because I didn't like Donaldson. I thought that was boring.
So that is your given name.
It is my given name.
That is a great television
name. Is it? Mm-hmm. I thought it was a boring name.
No, it's perfect.
My grandma was like, this is a good name. Of course, she's the Donaldson. She's like, you never know what you might get.
Is that Scottish origin?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Carol, what would you like to promote?
I haven't been on social media in ages. I try to stay off of it. I don't have anything to promote other than my future as Zabe's podcast. I hope I can come up with some witty topics for you. I don't think you need any help from me. I'm just trying to weasel my way back into your heart.
Carol, you're always in my heart, and I would gladly have you part of our Palm shows on an ongoing basis.
Well, there you go.
Because you're great with anybody who comes in as our third wheel. So if you could do that.
I get to be third wheel.
No. No, no. You're the second wheel. The other wheel will be the third.
Thank you. Ego needs that. I was 17. My papa taught me how to work, and Lord, he was mean. Working all day in that August heat, and he taught me how to fish. My uncle taught me how to drink.
Well, I went to California. This is Chase Beckham and his song 23. It helped propel him to win American Idol. Now I'm 23, and there ain't nobody who can drink like me. Soon I'll be 24, and the Lord knows that I can't drink no more. I bring this up because I saw Chase Beckham last weekend at the Tally Ho Theater in downtown Leesburg, Virginia. My man John Ronas had an extra ticket because Chase and his buddies wanted to play golf, and the nearest course was Beacon Hill, and the manager for the band said, hey, can you hook our guys up? And Ronas said, sure, for some tickets. So I went down to go see him and had no idea that he was the American Idol winner 2021. Now, he's good. He's really good. He was a former heavy machine operator from Apple Valley, California, and really kind of hit with his raspy country rock voice. And this was an original song, which is his best song. But as I'm standing there in the very small Tally Ho Theater, capacity of maybe 600, packed to the gills, I'm thinking to myself, does this guy, Chase Beckham, think, what the fuck happened? I won American Idol. How come I'm playing venues this small? When's my career going to take off, for God's sakes? It's not the way that my life goes. Lord, I know. And yet I had total respect for it because, you know what? This is the way the music business and industry works. Just because you have some success early, it doesn't mean it's going to be continued success. And the chance to play for a paycheck, even though I'm sure the paycheck wasn't big this night, you know what? You're out there singing your song. It's a great lyric from Martina McBride in her song Anyway. A couple great choruses in that song. You can chase a dream that seems so out of reach, and it may not ever come your way, dream it anyway. You can pour your soul out singing a song you believe in that tomorrow they'll forget you ever sing. Sing it anyway. Hey, I sing it anyway. Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful thought. Words to live by, for sure. Thank you so much for listening and being a valued Zabecast listener and maybe subscriber. If you want to subscribe to Fridays, jump right in. Water is warm. Mere $5 a month. You can get 12 months for the price of 11 when you sign up for a year. Cancel anytime. Otherwise, go month to month. I appreciate everyone supporting this venture. Have a great Tuesday, everybody, and we will see you next time. Taking it slow. It's not the way that my life goes. Lord, I know.
You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play. Plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.